I'm Nigel Hugill, and for this purpose I'm the chairman of the Centre for Cities.
So what are you hoping to get out of the event today?
Look, I'm a passionate advocate for cities, and it's not that cities are part of the UK economy, they are basically the UK economy. It's really what drives our performance these days. And we're at a tipping point. My sense is that maybe a pendulum swing, where we are in a position now for cities to take a much greater responsibility back for themselves. The London example and the manner in which powers have been devolved to the mayor, I think, is a good illustration. Hasn't really happened to any great degree in the rest of the country. And of course, the irony is that that delegation will coincide with a period when financial support is reduced. But nevertheless, I'm hoping that out of adversity comes opportunity, and that there is a greater sense of involvement and ownership of responsibility back for our cities, so that they've got a better sense of being able to carry their own destiny forward.
Okay, and what did you think of the speakers today?
Actually, I thought they were great. I thought it was a really good balance of specialists and celebrities and lay, what you might call a little bit more of a lay person. It was a very good balance, and the audience was great too. It was one of those great days when you have good speakers and a good audience and strong interaction. In my experience, it doesn't happen very often, but today was absolutely one of those days. And I think the spirit was good at being part of that greater set of arrangements with what was going on outside. The whole day had a good feel about it. I think it's a really good start.
Did you have any interesting conversations?
I saw my friend Hamish McCrae, who I always enjoy speaking with. Yeah, but there were lots of conversations going on all through the day. I have a phrase which is the strength of weak ties, and it's how the most effective networks function. You don't want to just see your friends. You don't want to speak to people who you speak to regularly. So for me today, the kick was having a range of conversations with people that I wouldn't normally speak with. So that was really fun for me.
Thank you. What do you think are the priorities for businesses who want to stay relevant in modern sustainable cities?
Well, at the moment, it's not just about staying relevant, it's about staying alive. You know, this is a tough old climate. But the other side of that is that those that survive now can thrive subsequently. And the basis of that has got to be the strengths that we have in this country. You know, it's the well-trodden themes, but we are good at innovating. We're actually a much better service economy than sometimes we give them credit for. The quality, not just in London, but across the board in our cities, is so much better than it was. And that's why we've got more tourists coming here. It's why that whole, you know, the UK PLC has to be a hallmark for quality. And I think that sense is well established. People really now understand that. And of course, in relation to overseas, the fact that our currency is so competitive is an advantage. It's a big advantage to London. We've got to try and make it more of an advantage to the rest of the country.
Okay, and how do you think buildings can play a part in all of this?
Buildings can play a part because it's a very hard time to be buildings. You have to do it on a long. You have to take it on a long run. I'm a great believer in it. There's been quite a lot of talk today about paradigm shifts. I don't really do paradigm shifts. I can't really relate to them. I do increments. I've been a developer for 25 years, and incremental is what I understand. You've got to build within what is practical. And so how do I think buildings can play a part? I'd rather answer the question that is, are buildings playing a part? And they are absolutely. You know, I think the I've been involved with the Green Building Council, and when I compare with the United States or Australia, the culture and the importance of the green agenda, I have to say, is much, much more deeply embedded here than it is in either of those countries. We are much more bloodstream rather than bolt-on. And so our buildings have been getting progressively better now for the last 10 years. We can do it better again. Mm-hmm. The New York Times building was used as an illustration today of when they set about reducing energy costs. We've done a lot of that here as well. So,
can you give us any examples of buildings that you think are sort of paving the way for that?
Slightly invidious to pull out specific ones because of the fact that actually the whole thrust of our building codes have been quite strong on this for a long time. Everybody builds to BREEAM good these days, but more often than not, they're BREEAM excellent. The last company that I chaired, Lendlease, we built a new headquarters, or we converted a new headquarters, and we used bamboo for all the internal fitting. Actually, it looked great, but also it was very sustainable. It grows back very quickly. In Chiswick Park, there are very strong innovations. So no, it's now not a new project, but those innovations in terms of cutting down the amount of air conditioning. You know, we are there, and similarly, a number of the new city buildings are built in that same fashion. Generally, the UK codes are quite tough. Often, elsewhere in the world, people use those as an examination test that they try and have to get to. Here, the presumption is, look, why can't we see if we can do better? And that's been that's been reflected in investment yields. There is genuinely, for me, one of the most encouraging things is across the, I'm very involved with the property industry, and across that industry there is a genuine conviction, which I have to say I don't see to the same extent internationally. It really is something that is important in the UK, and it's one of the areas that we lead in. And going back to a previous question about what can be done, you know, we are seen, Arabs amongst many are one of the very strong of our consultancies that do a lot of work now, particularly in China, and helping, on the one hand, the most consumptive country in the world from an environmental point of view, but equally well, they're very determined to start trying to change that. And so a lot of our major businesses have done a lot of work in the last few years. And in the last couple of years, that advice has been cheaper because of the currency. So if you look at the strength of their programs, but also their businesses, there has been this benefit that I was describing before.
Okay, and it's interesting you mentioned Hamish earlier, because we interviewed him, and he mentioned Copenhagen as a city that London should look towards as, you know, one that's doing all of these things and being very modern and very sustainable. Do you think that there are other cities as well, that there are other cities around the world that you look to for inspiration or for ideas?
I think, much as I admire Hamish, I personally find the comparators in Sweden or Holland, I think they're easy comparisons to make, but they miss the fact that actually, particularly when you're looking at London, which is the comparison that you drew, London is of a completely different scale. And so the right comparisons with London are New York, Tokyo. And if you look at the extent to which we have seen population growth in London over the last 20 years, and that's projected to continue. The immigration, people always look at the immigration from lower income categories. Actually, there's also been a substantial influx into London of very highly paid and very highly specialised and very highly achieving people. So you've had this combination going into London. And part of that's been extremely effective in generating economic growth, far more than Copenhagen. But of course it produces income disparities in the process. And somebody once told me that Copenhagen you could get most things for free. Equally well, people say of London that you can get anything you want, and it's probably the only place in the world you can get anything you want as long as you're prepared to pay for it. And that, so it creates a very different set of dynamics. So personally, I'm more interested in the relationships between the very, very large scale cities, and I think London holds up pretty well on that. I think it's getting better. And part of the reason it's getting better is because we're not insular. It's a very open, and the extent to which London has absorbed people successfully, and I think will continue to do that, is actually a real example to the rest of the world. And interestingly, when I go elsewhere in the world, London is often used as an example in the same way that Hamish was using Copenhagen. So I'm happy to do it that way around.
Great, okay. Are there any other burning issues you'd like to discuss here?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, we've absolutely got to keep on in the way that we are. We've got to, from a city perspective, this is a period of unusual political fluidity. And if we're right that there is a pendulum swing, and that the authority will be conferred back to some of our major cities, and they are given a greater responsibility, and they get to keep business rates, all of the things that a shopping list I could give you, then hopefully we'll look back and say, well, it was tough old medicine to take. But actually, the result is that we've all come out stronger in the process, and now we do feel much more empowered. We've got people of course care about their cities, but the government of those cities has been rather demeaned in the last 15 years by the very central nature of very dictating nature of what's been taking place. And paradoxically, London, which was our strongest economy, has been able to take a substantial amount of authority back for itself through the introduction of a mayor. That's been much less the case in the rest of the country. So we've got to try and balance things up, not just from an economic point of view, but also from a position of authority and governance.
Do you think an event like this can help to bring tangible changes in the way that things are happening?
Yeah, I think it's a good start. And you know, that's what it was set up as a start. And I think what events like this can do is help capture a mood. And so, you know, and the mood of today has been fantastic because actually it's been quite optimistic outside in the gardens and with some of the crazy ideas that were taking place. But out of that craziness comes an element. It's like haute couture fashion. Out of that, an element of it comes into the high street. And we'll see that, I think, taking place. And similarly, within the debate, as I said before, we've had this really wonderful eclectic collection of a sort of dolly mixture that wouldn't otherwise have come together in this form, and that has to be a good thing. And just that whole sense of building a new consensus, as I said before, I'm not big on paradigm shifts, but I'm big on building consensus. And I think we are seeing that, and that mood shift, which is you've got to take for all of these things. You've got to take people with you. You've got to be running with. There's an element in which you've got to run with the pack. And I think days like today help both lead and promote, but create that body of support.